Good afternoon, everybody. It is Thursday afternoon, and it is now time for Inside the Eye Live Prime Time.
Hey, Fetch. Hey, Fetch.
Quiet. Quiet. Go ahead. She's asking a question. Don't be rude. Don't be rude.
Hey, Fetch, did that woman really say you have garnets of steel and a mind like a freaking laser?
Mary, you can't be asking questions like that. This is Inside the Eye Live Prime Time.
Why not? Aren't we broadcasting from the Middle East?
Well, yeah, but we might be seen as being politically incorrect.
You know, the problem is everybody dumps people when there's a sign of political incorrectness.
Fetchan, you're always politically correct.
Heck, thanks. Does that mean we can talk about dumping the Israelis tomorrow?
Oh, I'm sure you will probably say quite a bit more than that. And now coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, this is Inside the Eye Live Prime Time with your host, The Fetch.
All right, thank you very much for that, Mary, from Riyadh. This is The Fetch, and you are indeed tuned in to Inside the Ally Prime Time. Now, today's date is Thursday, October the 24th, 2019, and a good Thursday afternoon to early evening to all of you listening in the United States and Canada, and a good late evening to early Friday morning to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones, and of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web or our FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. Overall, a pretty nice day today in Riyadh as temperatures hit a high of 95 degrees for a very brief period of time, though, and that was largely under sunny skies, although we did have occasional wisps of clouds floating through the area. The current temperature here in Riyadh sits at 76 degrees, while overnight lows should reach down to 71 degrees in the hour before sunrise. And winds are a very moderate 7 miles per hour coming out of the southeast. Now, to those of you who tuned in last week, a bit of an apology as there was an emergency trip that I had to take. Wednesday evening, found myself heading to the airport, and basically I had a red-eye flight into Frankfurt, Germany, where I transited, then headed down to Milan, then caught a car waiting for me to go into the northern part of Italy, and I did not actually get to my hotel room until about 10 minutes into the show start time, but truth be told, I didn't take my gear, so I wasn't actually planning to do the show because of the nature of the business involved. But I didn't have a chance to tell the studio either. So anyways, we apologize for that. So to everybody or whoever took last week's show and filled in the airtime, thanks so much for that. And as for this past Saturday's show, a big thanks again to Frederick. And that's Frederick Blackburn from Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club again. And then to Woody and both of these Southern gentlemen. Were kind enough to share some of their experiences and do a show really quick, you know, with on the fly, without too much preparation. And quite frankly, I thought they did a fantastic job. I listened to that show 3 times. By the time I got to listen to that show, I was down in the central eastern part of Italy at a little town called Pesaro. And that is not too, it's actually right on the Adriatic Sea. And cute little town, quite frankly, and just stayed there, stayed for a day and a half, 2 days there, and then headed back up into Milan. It was a really busy, busy trip, to say the least. I got back into Riyadh last night, not too late, about 7:30. We had a fantastic trip. Everything went well. And thank you for everybody and your support as far as keeping the show up and running. That's mainly to Frederick, the crew over at Revolution Radio at the studio. Everybody involved who helped keep this show going, thank you very much for that. Now,
As for the studio, we actually have a regular show plan. That's right. We've got kind of a regular show because the studio is actually back up and running normally again. And as they said, back at the studio, at least for now. So hopefully we'll get through the show without too many technical difficulties. Now, what I'm going to do real quick, I'm already there. I'm just going to check insidetheilive.com. Click on the live chat button. And guys, if you are there already, if you can just kind of let me know how it's going. I'm actually using, at the moment, the hotel internet. And if it's not working well, we will cut it over to a different internet. We do have a failover or backup internet. So just kind of let me know how it's going in the chat room. And if everything is okay, that's great. We'll just keep things rolling. Otherwise, we'll set everything up to a separate, internet. So guys, we want to keep the quality, obviously, as good as possible. You know, when I was in Italy, it was kind of an interesting trip. It was an emergency type of trip. And so I got in there, and one of the first things I noticed when I got into the hotel was, of course, you have the televisions going. They don't put CNN, thank goodness, in these hotels inside of Italy. But one of the first things I did notice was that the current head of the Lega party, and of course, the former interior minister for Italy, this guy was everywhere. He was literally everywhere on the news. And that was because he was holding a political rally coming up that Saturday in Rome. And what he did, they brought in over 100,000 people and held what was really quite a massive rally in Rome. And tens of thousands, they say, of right-wing, you know, actually, depending on where you read, it's 100,000. Others will say tens of thousands, which is quite a bit less than 100,000. But anyways, you had about 100,000 people. They filled what's called the Piazza San Giovanni Square, or Piazza San Giovanni. They were literally ferried in, though, from all over the country by 8 special trains, 400 buses, and for what they called Italian Pride demonstration. Interesting enough that you can have an Italian Pride now in Italy, but we still can't have American Pride or European American Pride in the United States. But hey, you can have an Italian Pride. That's, I guess, a good start. This is, as Salvini was talking to the crowd, a quote he said is, "This is the Italy that works and suffers, that dreams and hopes." And of course, it's the same Italians that the globalists, which includes a large portion of Jewish, organized Jewish interests, wants to predate on, to parasite off of, and really take their income and their opportunities and give it to just anybody and everybody who comes into the country of Italy. Now, it's interesting about Italy is I was traversing the country and I spent about 40 hours in total travel time. It was kind of tiring. My body was actually stiff from sitting in cars the whole time. And that's because I was in the backseat, guys. We had a delegation type of thing. And I'm the junior as far as everything goes. So I got the backseat, and it was kind of like a Mercedes coupe. I think it was a CLK 200, something like that. And it was just not enough leg room for me. So I ended up stiff from the whole show. But anyways, as I was traveling, one of the things I was just keenly aware of, and quite frankly, I would never have been aware of this 5-10 years ago, but something I was keenly aware of now was the multiculturalism. One of the first things I'm looking for as I traversed Italy is, what are the levels of multiculturalism? Now, when I was up in the furthest parts of Italy, up near the Alps, one of the first things I noticed was that the only people that you could see kind of walking on the streets that looked like they didn't really belong there were 4 black kids. It's like, why are you here type of thing? What are you doing here? What are you doing out here? You don't look like tourists. You don't look like you're producing anything. They might be good people, again, but it's just something you notice. It's something that sticks out. Then you went to a restaurant, and it's got, you know, you can see the Jewish programming of race mixing, if you want to call it that, in play. You would see an Italian guy with some girl from Africa, and I'm thinking, man, wow, you know, this is part of Jewish programming all in play. Now, he may have been a colleague, he may have, you know, been something, but you just notice it. And so this was pretty well the case, but it wasn't like everywhere.
because where I was at, these were pretty well largely Italian towns. You didn't see a whole lot of people from Africa where I was. Now, again, I was up in the northern reaches of Italy. Now, when I traveled down to the west, to the eastern, central eastern part of Italy, again, I was going into areas that were rich in Italian culture. We're talking about having dinner in a building that was over 400 years old. An absolutely marvelous ambiance to what we had was, quite frankly, a very successful trip. So fantastic meals, a little bit too much wine and drink. And it's funny, my Saudi guides there, they said, Dennis, we can't drink because, you know, we are who we are. But he said, you're out of Saudi now. The beer's open. The tap's open for you. Go ahead. If you want some wine, just drink, man. You're out of Saudi. Don't worry. And if you want some beer, you can have some beer. If you want to eat bacon. If you want to have ham, just have some ham. They were very, very polite. They said, look, you're out of Saudi. Enjoy yourself. You're our guest. You're here on our behalf. So please enjoy yourself. So they allowed me to drink and to eat my bacon for breakfast. It was quite a nice trip. Fantastic, quite frankly, the whole time. Now, they, of course, couldn't drink, but that's their personal choice. But they did not obviously impose that upon me. So it was really quite a nice trip, to say the least. But, you know, when I got up into Milan to close out the trip, we had to get back to Milan in order to obviously leave the country because we were going to fly out of Milan. And then I ended up going out to some lake. They put me up in a lake. It was actually pretty darn cool, you know. And the whole time you're just paying attention to the multiculturalism. What is actually going on? And for the most part, to be fair and to be truthful, where I was, you did not see too much of an invasion of multiculturalism. Italy, quite frankly, it's my first really extended trip beyond Milan into Italy, and it struck me as an absolutely beautiful country. Quite frankly, the weather was fantastic. We had in the northern part some rain. You had snow already over the Alps. Just fantastic, fantastic, beautiful country as far as how it appeared. And of course, we're traveling more in the rural areas on the eastern side more than on the western side. But when you got into Milan, you could really see the multiculturalism. Arabic culture has certainly made inroads. I don't care per se. You know, there's lots of good stuff going on. Like, you know, so you could go into some good Arabic places, enjoy some argila, the shisha, have a beer while you're relaxing, and just take in the scenes. So we did some of that. And quite frankly, it was just a fantastic. But, you know, you go to some of these super fine quality restaurants, and you would just see the multiculturalism in play, Italians with their African girlfriends. And I'm like, man, you know, it's definitely the programming is working. And I was just seeing it as I got into Milan. But for the most part, aside from Milan, which is the only main big city I actually visited, I really didn't see a whole lot of it. Now, what's interesting, when I was up in the northern part of Italy, we had a nice set of meetings. So the guys, they said, come on, let's go celebrate. So they took me out to a place that was, quite frankly, a happening nightlife place. And I drank a little bit too much. So we went to a restaurant afterwards, and we met a Jewish girl. A Jewess was there. And so I got talking to her. I didn't know she was Jewish. Okay. I was just talking, and I mentioned, you know, the Jewish agenda to destroy the West. And she kind of agreed with me, and she says, you know, I'm actually a Jew myself. And then she actually had her nose done. You know, you hear about Jews getting their nose done. This girl, this woman actually, she actually had her nose done. So she's like taking my hand. She says, here, touch my nose right here. So you feel that? You can feel how it's been broken apart, and they fixed my nose for me. So yet she actually had her nose fixed, so she didn't look Jewish. And so we got to talking politics, as we are wont to do. She's a lawyer, go figure. And she, all right, everybody, I think we are now back live. Short power failure, and then Skype decided not to load for a few minutes there. It just kind of hung. But we're back. We did have a small power failure on one of the laptops. So anyways, we're back. As we were talking about before we went into the break, we had, again, Friday night, you know, I went out after what we considered a very nice meeting. They wanted to treat me to some nightlife. So we went to this big square up in northern Italy. And literally, you know, afterwards going to this restaurant, we're talking about this girl talking about Salvini. And she was telling me, no, Salvini's not enough. Italy needs more. Because we were talking about the Jewish destruction of really Western society. And then this girl confided in me that she said she's Jewish. She had her nose done. She actually had me touch her nose, you know, say, see, right here, that's where they broke it and took the cartilage out so I don't look like I have this nose that's Jewish. So she had a very thin nose, quite frankly, and she was dyed her hair a rich blonde. And so literally, you know, it's a case where, you know, got this Jewish, she's a lawyer. She's saying that Italians, they've lost their passion, which may be true in some cases, that the people are dumbed down. And so that is something that we kind of have across the West. This is part of the problem we have with Jewish control of our education, our food distribution, our political infrastructure, our media, etc. When you look at everything in its totality, that really is a case where we have a big problem. Big problem really with just the way the elites are running our societies if our people continue to get less and less intelligent, as it might, as we could say. That's kind of a nice way to put it. Anyways, let's see here. I kind of lost my focus just a little bit. I know we're going to be going into a break here shortly. Let me try to get everything wound up here. We're not in a break yet. Okay, so be it. Anyways, guys, so all said and done, everybody, you know, you got to watch out for who you talk to. Here I am thinking I'm talking to an Italian girl. I wasn't. I was talking to a Jew, and she says, no, I had my nose done. So anyways, just kind of an interesting story there while I was out and about gallivanting across Italy this past week. Anyways, going into a break now. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye live again. Actually, Inside the Ally Primetime, back with more right after this set of break, commercial breaks here. And welcome back. Thursday, October the 24th, 2019. It's the Fetch Inside the Ally Primetime. Again, it's early morning here, as you guys probably know by now. It's 1:32 in the morning here in Riyadh. It's hot, quite frankly, in this room right now. Beyond hot. It feels just kind of stuffy, even though the weather outside is nice and the windows are open. It just doesn't seem to want to make it into the room here, but that's the way it goes sometimes, right? Anyways, you are listening to Revolution Radio, listener-sponsored and supported radio. It does rely upon, again, your donations to help keep the network alive, up and running. I know the guys back at the studio, those who've been taking over since Nighthawk passed, they've been working really hard to try to put the studio back together. And they've put together a team that's actually starting to work things, some of the bugs out. And from what I can tell, it looks like it's working. It looks like it's working pretty good. So thanks for all the efforts back there. But guys, it does take money to keep these stations up. You know, whatever you can give, certainly do that, you know, because it really does take all of us to help put these networks together. Talent-wise, technical-wise, you name it. So, and that takes money. Money makes the world go round, regardless of who's printing it, right? So we need it. So anyways, that's what we want to say is let's get that going. Again, keep supporting the network. Of course, this show is sponsored by the Graham Hart Show, for one. I think I actually have that, man. I think it's still the Graham Hart Show. But yeah, it's about time now for the Cat Report. And that should start here just in a quick second, right? Helps if you cue things and turn things. You know, I was watching an Alex Jones show after yesterday, and he said, everybody, all the hosts on this show, they're the ones controlling all the buttons. And I'm like, you know what? You probably do a better job than I do, Alex, at controlling all of these buttons. I need more space, quite frankly, to run a proper show. Really, you need space to run these show. Anyways, let's see if we can get the cat report going.
What do you think? I should add a lady co-host to this?
It's not. If you've got someone you can bounce on, you should be careful to use lady co-host.
You know what I need to do? I need to fly to Cornwall.
train arrives at the station.
Like, yes, and pitching at the bar. Just put a big arrow, Fetch, here. From you. You and I ought to do a show together, the Grand Petro Show. Let's change it from Fetch, because I don't overshadow you. So if I go to Petro, it's like, who's Petro?
Wake up, get off the Hoax Train, the Hoax Train. The next stop is reading a diary.
Is this live? Actually, yes, it is.
I'm not listening back to this part.
You know, maybe Grissom's going to cut this part out. This wasn't live. I know they were missing. Anyway, yes.
Because it's time for the ITEL Primetime Cat Report, sponsored by Graham Hart and the Graham Hart Show with Breiser, which streams live every Monday on Cornwall Revolution Radio at 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern, and by Graham Hart's song,
Hoax Train, the Hoax Train.
Hoax Train, where a little historical humor triggers the hoaxsters and anti-Semite-hunters alike. To listen to the Graham Hart Show, visit grism.blogspot.com before showtime for all the listen live and chat room links. And this week's ITEL Cat Report, or not, it's just the ITEL Cat Report. And I was going to go back to the Philippines for that one. We have six kittens were born to Pressy. One of those kittens didn't quite make it, so we're down to five. And looking at them, we've got two white cats. I got two cats that are kind of blackish and white, so that's going to be something to do. We know who the father is there because we know that cat. And one that looks like good old Spiker's got some action in there. He looks like he's got a baby in that mix. So we've got five kittens right now. And already they're starting to move a little bit. The mother's happy. She's doing a great job. And everything is going great. And, of course, with George, we did get the message. Yeah, you'd think she'd know I'm on the radio. So basically, George, I got your message. Sorry to hear that. We've had some, of course, we're big cat people here. And so, you know, we kind of tell stories behind the scenes about our cats and stuff like that. So, George, touching message there. And my hearts go out to you. So we've lost a cat, very loved one, within the bigger extended ITEL family here. Also this week. So it was kind of a tough thing this week for some out there. And I can hear you. It's not a great thing, but I'll tell you what, at least on our front, we've got everything young up and coming. So we've got a lot of young cats now, probably everybody's less than 2 years old. Ming Ming, our one cat, she's like, doesn't like anybody. It's like, get away from me. She's fighting off all the males right now. She doesn't like them at all. So we'll just have to see if I have even another five cats. And I don't know what I'm going to do with 10 cats again. I haven't had female cats for so long, so I haven't had any kittens for so long. But everything otherwise is going great. We've already got takers. People are going to buy these cats from us, probably about $100 a piece, believe it or not. This type of cat, Turkish Angora, is kind of a popular breed, and people like outside cats. In other words, they don't like domestic cats in the Philippines, but they like when you bring these kind of exotic, and not that this is exotic to us, but to the Philippine mind, our cats are kind of exotic, so they think these cats are kind of cool. I don't know. They look kind of like mutts to me, except for Pressy, but everything else is to the Filipino mind, it's actually all pretty good stuff. So all good stuff. Everything's going great on the ITEL cat front. So, again, knock on wood on that one. So we'll just have to see how these kittens start to grow up a bit because, you know, Jordan was always tough on cats. So we'll see how it's like in the Philippines shortly. But, you know, we're spending a lot of time, obviously, trying to just keep food on the table, make sure everything is done because, you know, it's tough. We spent a lot of money moving, getting everything set up. So we're a little bit cash tight right now, like a lot of you out there I know who listen to the show. So we are just doing what we can equally to keep everybody fed. It's been a tough month for everybody, I'll tell you, but it's okay. Things happen. It's just the way it is. We're quite happy with the move, though. People are very excited for us, and everything is going great. So we'll have to just, again, see how it all plays out, everybody. Time now for...
Oy vey! Oy gewalt! It's like another shower!
Oy vey!
Oy vey, everybody!
Hollywood is run by Jews. It's owned by Jews. Very goddamn angry at some of the Jews.
I thrive on boy and tears.
Oy vey!
Oy vey, everybody!
The Oy vey moment is proudly sponsored by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, author of The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored. The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored features a rapturous 144,000 words that is replete with additional articles never before seen in print. And after having its distribution banned by Amazon and Lulu, The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored is now available from Andy himself at AndrewCarringtonHitchcock.com. Get your copy today, won't you? Of course, don't forget to listen to Andy's The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, which streams Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock a.m. to 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern on Eurofolk Radio at EurofolkRadio.com. To listen, simply visit EurofolkRadio.com during showtime and click on the Listen Live link, or visit AndrewCarringtonHitchcock.com for Andy's free show archives, which comprises one of the most extensive guest lists in the alternative media.
Okay. First of all, let's go to Belgium for the ITEL, for the Oy vey moment. If you recall, a while ago, there was a parade that was done in Flanders or something like that in Belgium. And what it was a caricature of this Jewish guy, you know, it was a big float, a caricature of a Jew with money, you know, basically chasing after money, something like that. I forget exactly what it was, but it made a big, big, big fuss on the international Jewish scene. Jews across the world were crying foul. It's like, you know what? Why are you Jews in America worried about something that was done in Belgium? And equally, why are you Jews in Australia, quite frankly, chiming in on what is basically a Belgium issue? Unless, of course, you Jews operate internationally and hence you're cosmopolitans, because we're just observing, of course. We're not accusing you of being cosmopolitan. We're just noticing that whenever there's an issue that Jews don't like, all around the world, they rise up in all this idiotic indignation, screaming like little children, like, oh, this is anti-Semitic, and it just goes on and on and on. Well, there's now a 2020 coming up. And what they did, this is the same group, okay? The same group, there's, again, that put this together. Now there's 150 this year, 150 caricatures mocking Jews ahead of the 2020 event. Now the caricatures, some featuring Orthodox Jews with red hooked noses. Well, you know what? They're hooked until you go get a nose job, okay, guys? And it's funny, just to pass things along. My friends here, my colleagues on the trip, I said, you know, Jews are a big problem. You know, they're a big problem in my country. I said, you guys are so lucky you don't have to deal with them all the time, but we got to deal with them. They're intolerant. They're racist. They're bigoted. They hate everybody. They want to impose themselves on our societies. They're destroying our societies. They're bringing our countries down. And I'm like, you guys are lucky. And I said, you know, I can generally tell a Jew when I see one, right? And the one guy says, no, that's not true. No, that's not true. My other friend jumps. He says, yes, I can see. I know. I can tell by the noses. I can tell by the chin. I can tell by the way they walk. They just have a unique walk about them. Well, in this case, there's a red hook-nosed, golden-toothed Jew. They were printed on ribbons intended for participants in the annual event. And this event was added, what, in 2010 to the representative list of intangible cultural heritage of humanity of the United Nations. That's the event. Basically UNESCO. So this whole event was now a UNESCO event. So basically last year, there a bunch of condemnations came around. You know, this was actually last March. And it was, that's right. One of the floats had a rat on his shoulder. The revelers were dancing to a song about money composed by the organizer, said the float was a protest of rising living costs and other issues, you know, stuff like that. But here again, they have come back and they're printing more what we could call, Jew woke type of caricatures, and Jews, as you can imagine, are already raising a fuss about that. You know, in America, you know, you would think that American Jews would be quite happy. They're wealthy, they're powerful, they're rich, they control our media, they control our they control Hollywood, so they control the cultural, the direction of the people. They control so many of the politicians. Virtually all of our politicians are signing what are essentially treasonous oaths to a foreign power, which is Israel. Jews are very active, let's be honest, in silencing free speech. We saw that just this week. The SPLC taking massive credit for bringing Henrik Palmgren and Lana Lochtiff's Red Ice TV down from YouTube, something that had 330,000 subscribers. Now, I had appeared quite on Red Ice back when they were just making that transition to politics, and they brought me on to do a couple shows. One was on the Noahide laws, and another one was on the kosher tax. And so these were both very well-received shows. And I'll tell you, we need, I don't care what you guys think out there, we need solid, strong voices to help get the word out. There's many ways to get the information out. And when you get tired of one message, you're going to go to somebody else. Eventually, you're going to come to somebody like me, but we are not going to be the big mainstream reach, at least not yet. And but we need these big names, and Red Ice always brought. Well, we know Jews have intolerance towards virtually everything. And now, according to a poll that just came out this week, nearly three quarters, actually it's more than that, 88%. That's right, 88%. We tell you, Jews are basically a unified group. Here's a perfect example. 88% of American Jews say anti-Semitism is a problem in the U.S. Now, can you imagine the chutzpah of these classless idiots? They control our media. They control everything, guys. They control education. They control the Federal Reserve through their banking interests. They control politicians. They control higher level finance. They control so much of the science, medical. They're killing us, literally, with their medicines. They are creating laws that are using vaccines to kill everybody, basically, or destroy families. And they say that anti-Semitism is a problem. Can you believe that? They think anti-Semitism is a problem. Well, guess what? It needs to get to the point where 88% of Americans view Jews as a problem. Because basically 88% of American Jews think any political opposition to Jewish policies, because that's what anti-Jewishism is, which they label as anti-Semitism, which is basically racist, hate-filled dogma from their society. That word, guys, is typical. What Jews call hate speech, the use of that word is hate speech based on Jewish definitions, because it is intended to heap hatred upon the targeted individuals. Let's not kid ourselves. The use of the term anti-Semitism is raw, unadulterated Jewish hate speech towards their political opponents. It is meant to heap, again, hatred on them, silence them, you name it. And we've all seen how that works now over the years. More than, again, 8 in 10, almost 9 in 10, okay? They say that anti-Semitism is spiked. Okay, well, how many times have you Jews in our country told us that we can't speak anymore, that we have to shut our mouths because you Jews are just too special? Think about it. Jews are sitting up there in the highest echelons of power, and they're literally shouting down to all of us goyim deplorables and saying, you don't have a voice in your country anymore. It's not your country anymore. This is a Jewish plutocracy, and every single one of you has to shut your mouth and not participate in the political process, because if you try to be in opposition to us, we will declare you an anti-Semite, we will take your job away, we will try to destroy you in every different facet that we can. And guess what? They actually get away with it. They actually get away with it each and every time. And they're complaining that somehow somehow anti-Semitism is a problem? Listen, guys, it has to get to the point where 88% of Americans view Jews as a problem. That's where it has to go. Now, again, imagine 8 in 10, 9 in 10. Now, this was a telephone survey. 1,283 Jewish adults were phoned, okay? Obviously, it's a telephone survey from September 11th to October the 6th. And again, 88% of the respondents believe that anti-Semitism was a problem, 50% as somewhat of a problem, and 38%, 40% of the Jewish community out there says it's a very serious problem. Problem. Can you imagine the chutzpah of telling the American people that they are a problem for opposing the absolute insanity and failures of Jews and their policies? Isn't that what this is all about? The failure of Jews and their policies is being seen, and the willingness to speak up and out about it is viewed as a serious problem in Jewish society. Now, American Jews, quoting here, could not be clearer about the reality of anti-Semitism in the United States. The American Jewish Committee, everybody, I swear, everybody in that freaking lame society is part of an organization. I hate reading about it. It's like, don't you guys work for a living? Is everything you guys do have to be fleecing us, the people? Because I know the American Jewish Committee CEO is, guess what, a nonprofit. So we, the American people, are paying for this clown to sit there and tell us that we're all basically deplorables and that we're a problem for him. Now, asked the feeling of anti-Semitism, 72% they actually disapprove. What does that tell us? If 72% of American Jews say they disapprove of Trump's handling, and here's a guy that's been so, we must fight anti-Semitism and fight the scourge. You know what? It's telling you that Jews want to become a totalitarian, communist, Cheka nation where they can just start hounding you and jailing you, and they're already doing that. That's the funny thing here about America and elsewhere in the world. Wherever they hold sway, they're already jailing you for your thoughts. They're already destroying you because of your political opposition. 62% of Jews strongly, strongly say that they disapprove of the way Trump is handling, and only 24% of American Jews think Trump is okay in dealing with. And can you imagine the chutzpah? I don't know if people get this yet. I really don't understand if people get this. But these types of polls point to a chutzpah that is so filled with arrogant pomposity. I think that's a word. It's just arrogant pomposity. Here's this hyper-minority group of failures for the American people. Of liars, fraudsters. Guys, they promised us. They promised the American people in 1965 that if you pass this Immigration Act, it would not affect the balance of power in the United States. It would not affect the demographics of the country. They lied to us straight to our faces. They lied to us about so many things. They were intimately involved, as all of us see, in committing the act of 9/11. They've all tried to silence us just for raising the fact that the state of Israel, a foreign power that so many Jews are loyal to, because what? We talk about the USS Liberty and they want to talk us down as Americans because we talk about, quote unquote, the USS Liberty. It's all quite an amazing feat that I see going on inside the Jewish community, and they just don't know how to shut up. They just go on and on and on and try to tell us just how important Jews are compared to everything else. It's actually a level of chutzpah that really has become mind-boggling, absolutely mind-boggling. Someone here, they said here, they were likelier to perceive, Jews that is, they were likelier to perceive a threat from the far right and radical Muslims than they did from the left. Because the left folks, for the most part, are Jews themselves. The left is a product of Jewish society. It's a product of Jewish culture. It's not really an issue to Jews because they know this. They don't tell you about that. They're the ones behind bringing in the Muslim element into everybody's country. And it's not that they're bringing in the good people. They're bringing in the radicals. They're bringing in the Muslim brother. And then they want to complain about, oh, the Muslims are all so bad. Nothing annoys me more than to see these garbage people on social media talking about Islam, Islam, Islam. Heck, I'm out with guys that are Islam. Okay, seriously, and it's more prevalent than you guys realize. They're out there saying, dude, you're not in Saudi Arabia, drink. But you know what? What Jews are doing is bringing in the garbage, the trash, the fundamentalists, the ones that nobody wants to be with. Nobody from any culture wants to be with. They don't want to be with them. But Jews want you to think that's the element. Well, no, the problem is Jews themselves. The problem is Jews. And because we raise issues to that, that's quote unquote anti-Semitic. Go screw you. It's anti-Jewish. Your policies suck, guys. It's bottom line. Your policies suck as Jews. From a political point of view, Jewish policies suck. They destroy the country. They bring the nation down. They destroy the family. They destroy the culture. They destroy the nation state itself. All for what? So they can go make a few shekels? So they can tell us how super smart they are? And then they don't want you to talk about it so you can try to reverse the fact that they're stealing everybody's money? How would you like it if we put policies in place like Jews do to where you can just steal Jews' money over time? Steal all of it. Steal it. Just steal it. That's what they're doing. What do you think taxes are? What do you think half of the stuff they put in play are? What do you think all this genociding people through opioids is? They're just stealing everybody's money, man. And they get away with this. Oh, we're so smart. You're jealous. But don't talk about us because, oh, if I ain't anti-Semitic, right? Guys, 88% of America needs to see Jews as a threat. Not the fact 88% of Jews see us as a threat. It's the Fetch, everybody. Inside the Ally, prime time. Back with more right after this. All right, everybody. Welcome back. It's the Fetch, hour number two, Inside the Ally, prime time, October 24th, 2019. Lots of things going on in the world, quite frankly. You know, Trump in the United States, you've got, I mean, what Trump did just today, in fact, it's kind of interesting. He's anti-Semitic, I guess, himself, because he canceled the New York Times and the Washington Post across literally every single federal unit. I mean, literally the entire federal government now has dropped their subscriptions to the Washington Post and the New York Times, which is, quite frankly, it's a good thing. We should not be using the government to subsidize garbage Jewish publications. I mean, why should we do that? Now, obviously, that's a very anti-Semitic thing to do because Jews are geniuses. I mean, let's be honest. They're so smart that every single policy that they've given us has failed for us, the people. But, you know, you can't say that because they're going to call you an anti-Jew. I mean, an anti-Semite. I don't know, guys. I'm sick of whining Jews. I'm sick of Jews who are the most privileged people in America who can take away your freedoms, my freedoms, at just the wink of an eye and a phone call, complaining about how they're not being treated fair enough, that somehow we're supposed to love them because, oh my gosh, you know what? When, I don't know, we're Jews. You got to love us, man. We're just so awesome. I mean, you got to go to all of our gay clubs and everything else. These are all great places to hang out with. Ah, too much fun. Going to the 704 area code. Hi, Frank. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live Primetime.
Hey, Dennis. Good to hear you.
Yeah, well, good to be back. You guys miss me at all when I'm gone or not really?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. I know I talked to a couple people. Yeah,
withdrawals, like, dang that Fetch. What the hell is he doing now? We know he's a busy guy type of thing, but man, he should be here every week.
Yeah. Now the guys that filled in for you Saturday did a really good job.
I thought so. It was a great show, man. It was an interesting show. They did kind of like ad hoc. It wasn't too scripted. So the both of them talk, and trust me, Woody can talk. In this case, he can talk, man. So yeah, I liked the show. I listened to it three times.
Yeah, I kind of understand. Wow, three times. Okay. Well, it is very demoralizing. Those guys always bring up a lot of hard-to-hear information for me, but like I'd what? Rather have it than not have it.
Like what?
Well, some local stuff here that has to do with some people that I know, just conditions, political correctness and Jewish takeovers in certain areas here in the state of North Carolina.
Yeah, yeah, I think Frederick's probably one of the experts on that. Yeah, he seems to become quite an expert on this issue.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I wanted to bring up a couple of things. I was listening to David Duke today. By the way, Georgia Peach was on with David Duke. When was it? Was it Monday
yesterday.
Or Tuesday?
I
listened to it.
I think it was yesterday.
She did a great job.
Yeah, it was. I think it was yesterday. I believe it was yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yes, it was yesterday because I got email saying, hey, George is on. Give it a listen. I actually didn't get back to my hotel in time to listen. So I listened to it on the archives later. It was a good show. She did a good job. I thought David, Dr. David Duke, he spoke too much, didn't give her enough airtime, quite frankly. He could have let her go. She
well, that's
so
always. David Duke is always very jealous with the microphone. Unfortunately, that's, you know, I wish I could talk to him about that. Because he hurts himself by doing that, because it turns people off. I know people.
Yeah, I was. I didn't
think
like
very
it.
Much like I do, but they can't stand to listen to Dr. Duke because of how controlling he is and how, you know. I mean, I don't want to make too big of a deal of it, but he would be better off if he would back off some on that.
Yeah, I thought he talked too much personally, but then again, I'm a radio guy and he's got a wonderful guest on who could really lighten and brighten up the show, and she should have let Georgia go a little bit more. But it's okay. It was still a good effort. At least he did bring her on, gave her some airtime, which is always a good thing. It's not a bad
thing. By the way, no, it's a good thing. He's got a pretty big following, I think. And by the way, several weeks ago, I called David Duke. Now, he never takes my call or returns my call. But I told him, I said, look, I think it would be very beneficial to the cause of saving Western civilization as it goes to have on this woman, Georgia Peach. And I gave him a number of ways to get in contact with her. Now, I'm not taking credit for it. You know, he probably doesn't even listen to my messages. He probably just deletes them, as far as I know. But maybe someone else got to him. But anyway, whatever, however it happened, I'm glad it happened. Also, I was listening to him some today, and he brought up something that I think you and the audience will be very familiar with. I don't know if you were aware of this or not. It's just a little tidbit, and I don't doubt it. He said that the year following the attack on the USS Liberty, the foreign aid going to Israel increased threefold. Now, that just infuriated me when I heard that.
I'm sorry, I got distracted. Say that one more time.
The foreign aid given to Israel increased threefold following the attack on the USS Liberty.
And they're thinking anti-Semitism is a problem. You know, they attack us. They actually did an act of war against us, and then they're traitors inside of our government, engineer, something like that. I didn't know that, but it doesn't surprise me one second. I mean, it's just amazing
and
the treason of our people, of our Jewish population.
Yeah, and I get so tired of hearing people defend them. I just come up with any excuse to let the Jew off the hook. It just that I'll be honest with you, that demoralizes me when I hear our people come up, just reach for any excuse to let the Jew off the hook. That demoralizes me more than anything. I'm willing to stand up to them and do whatever I got to do there. But when I hear just constantly our people, our radio host, just do anything to defend them and make excuses for them. Well, we can't, you know, do anything because, you know, maybe it's not all of them. I mean, it's just insanity.
Yeah. Again, it's 88% of Jews think that everybody's a problem right now. So, yeah, okay, it's not all of them. I've always said the numbers between 88 to 93% of Jews are a problem. And now this survey comes out, 88% of Jews think we're a problem. Okay, fine, I'm right, 88 to 93%. Here's a very classic case in point. So, okay, it's.
And, you know, there are probably, you know how polls are. Sometimes people are reluctant to tell the truth, just like a lot of people would be reluctant to say, you know, in recent years that they support Trump to some stranger that calls their home. There are some Jews that are well aware of what's going on and how unpopular it is amongst some of the Jew-wise people out here. And they're actually a little bit reluctant. They almost don't even want to talk about it because they're not the more radicalized Jews. They're kind of like, oh God, you know, I wish the Jewish community would just back off a little bit. We got it so good, let's just not make a big deal of it. We run everything, we own everything. Why do we have to make a big deal? Let's just be kind of quiet for a while. You know, there's probably a little bit of that. I would say, I'd say 93-95% of Jews.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, Jewish society sticks together. The first question they ask is it good for Jews? They don't care about the American people. They don't care about anybody, quite frankly, but themselves. It is probably the most selfish society here on, well, some will say the Chinese are pretty selfish too. But they call the Chinese, by the way, the Jews of the Far East, so that would make sense. But anyways, yeah, it's a problem, Frank, and I think... 88% of Jews calling us a problem is a really big chutzpah moment. I'm just amazed.
Well, as one infamous Jew has said many times, the Jewish community, they never ask what's good for the country where they live, their country of citizenship. Of course, a lot of them are dual citizens. So that's a whole other thing. But they only ask what's good for the Jew. And I've been saying it just like you. I've been saying it for 10 years, over 10 years. Nothing of any substance or significance is going to change until it becomes very unpopular to be Jewish.
Yes, and, exactly. And I'm behind this. We have got to get to the stage where it is painful for a Jew to use the word anti-Semitism or anti-Semite. It has to become painful for them. They have to be railroaded into absolute embarrassment because the very use of that word, Frank, as you know, is intended to railroad us into absolute acquiescence and silence. So
and all anti-Semitism is, all it comes down to is an individual or group that refuse to allow themselves to be completely dominated and ruled over by Jew-centric Jews. That's all it is. Anybody that stands up, anybody that offers any criticism, anybody that has a problem with being dominated by Jewish power, that's anti-Semitism, period. That's all it is.
Correct. That's all it is. It's just basically anybody who opposes Jewish domination. It's the opposition.
All right. Thanks,
Josh. All right. Thanks, Frank. That's Frank, everybody. Telephone lines are, as you can tell, open 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. I don't know if you heard the story. I don't have it in front of me. I tried to find it quick. I just can't find it. It was on Gab, my thing on Gab, but Gab is like quirky. You know, it doesn't write. Give me what I want, you know, it just doesn't do it. But you had these two guys, these two kids, 24, 25 years old, something like that. They went to a Proud Boys, Gavin McGinnis. Gavin McGinnis is basically your typical flaming, excuse the language, guys, your typical flaming faggot, basically, using all kinds of paraphernalia to stick up as you know what on stage. He's had a lot of the scummiest people you can think of in the white, quote unquote, the white supremacist movement on his show. And he held some rally and he has a right to hold that rally. You know, at the end of the day, it's America. He has a right to hold that rally. A bunch of Antifa thugs came by, did some taunts, threw some urine at people, of course, provoking and things like that. Two guys went and basically defended themselves, really. And they got sent away for 4 years. 4 years for basically self-defense. 4 years for self-defense. And I wish I could find the darn story, man. It was like... Gab. I wish Gab would improve a little bit. I just can't get what I do properly here with Gab. Their notifications aren't very good. I don't like it. But nonetheless, you know, imagine 4 years. And the judge at the same time, there was a rabbi, or at least I think an Orthodox rabbi, but a Jewish guy for sure. He had repeatedly raped a teenage boy. The sentence could have taken out to 25 years. He gave the guy 2 years, basically like a suspended hand slaps type of sentence. 2 years for basically repeatedly raping a boy, literally like a 12, 13, 14 year old boy. And he gets 2 years, but this same judge puts two guys, white guys, away, whether you agree with them or not, for 4 years for defending themselves in a fight that we all know Antifa is trying to goad people into defending themselves. And then the judge had the nerve to say, we all remember, or I remember what happened in 1934. It's like, you know what, dude? The fact that you said that tells us that you are so prejudiced in this case, you should have recused yourself, because you're trying to make this into some Jewish issue. It's clearly Jewish driven, because nobody gives a crap about this type of information. Oh, we remember what happened in 1934, except the Jewish community. This isn't an issue of ours, because this entire thing, the Germans did the right thing. The Germans did the right thing when they dealt with the Jewish problem. It's the same issue that has to be done within the United States. You're going to have to eventually round them up and get them out of positions of power, or they're just going to run you into the dirt. Or if you're lucky, you're going to have basically FEMA camps set up and they're just going to kill everybody. That's what these guys do. This is their political agenda, man. They did it in Russia, at the Soviet Union. They did it to the Germans World War II, using us Americans as proxies. The most shameful event in American history has to be what we did to the Germans. Actually, we killed like 3 million Filipinos, by the way, in some of the most horrendous ways. I've learned through reading up on that. It's amazing that the Filipinos actually still like Americans, to be frank with you, after what the American military did to the Philippine communities back in the 1900s, early 1900s, late 1890s, 1900s. It's really atrocious. They killed like 3.5 million Filipinos. The American military, quite frankly, guys, when you really start to study their history, they have an atrocious record just from a Western value type of system. They're run by Talmudic Jews, man. There was a picture that came out the other day, and it was absolutely amazing. It showed British POWs released immediately after the war. They're healthy, they're smiling, they're laughing, they're having a good time, they're just in superb health. And then at the same time, it showed German POWs after the war. They're scared. The eyes are bugged out. They're haggard. They haven't been shaved in who knows how long. You can see that they've been malnourished, mistreated. And of course, we know about how many were killed. I mean, literally some 7 to 9 million Germans were murdered after the war. And I think of all these types of events, and I look at the American military and I'm like, dudes, I'm really not impressed. I'm just not impressed at you as an organization, as an American institution. There is actually no honor in what you guys are doing as a historical movement, as a historical institution. And although Americans would love to feel proud, after all, the American people fill the hole or fill the roles of what becomes the American military. But from what we have seen over the history, it's a shameful organization. It's so Talmudic Jewish, it's embarrassing. And you have to wonder why. Why is it that Western American men being sent for whatever reason, into the American military are killing themselves at the highest rate ever in the history of the military service itself? Literally, we're losing so many men nowadays. Is it because Jews run the VA? And because Jews run the VA, they are creating the necessary, as we've heard from Mark, the spark up in Philadelphia, that the VA is giving these guys drugs that actually enhance the trauma and thus make it even more difficult for soldiers to deal again? how many Jews are making a killing to, in two ways, both taking money and killing the American people by serving in the VA, through supplying the drugs, through supplying the medical establishment or the medical rulings and the agenda that basically starts to drug all of these American military men and women. Our suicide rates in America are at the highest they've ever been. Is it a combination of the fact that the military has no more honor, that it's actually a dishonorable job in many cases, that no matter how decent and honest American servicemen and women really are, that they cannot hide the shame of what they are asked to do in the service of this global monstrosity called Judaism? See, we have to ask what really is going on. And we see now that Trump has removed himself, let's just say removed himself from Syria, something that we had asked him to do a long time ago. And some of the things coming out of the Jewish press are absolutely absurd. Trump just handed the Syrians 2.5 billion barrels of oil. Jews, it's not your oil. It's not the Americans' oil. It's not our oil as Americans. It belongs to the Syrian people. He didn't give it to them. It's theirs to begin with. You are stealing it. We've given a gift to Putin. Dudes, you're not there. You're there illegally. You're not even in the country legally. And here's how stupid Jews are. Seriously, this is how stupid the American military is in Jewish policy. Basically, the people making these decisions. What they do, okay, we're going to pull out of Syria, right? Good idea. So we start pulling out of Syria, 1,000 troops. So you got Esper. I don't know. Is Esper a Jewish guy? Probably. I don't know. But we do know that the U.S. Army is basically a Jewish institution. It's a Talmudic institution. It's a sadistic institution. It's up there. It's fighting for the Kurds, working with the Kurds. Oh, and then all of a sudden we hear all this. Oh, they were backstabbed. Well, who cares? Honestly, who cares? I don't care. Why were they there to begin with? They wouldn't have been backstabbed if the Jews hadn't put them there to begin with. So who's the problem? Us for basically wanting to get our men and women out of Syria, or Jews for putting them there to begin with? We don't want them there. Americans have always said we do not want to fight wars for the idiotic, stupid, racist, Talmudic state of Israel. We know that Jews did 9/11. As far as we are concerned, Jews and the state of Israel are the mortal enemies, existential enemy of Western civilization. The idea that Israel exists is an abomination to Western civilization. It was created under the blood of Western civilization. Western civilization bled itself dry from a 33% global population down to a current 8.9% global population, all because of this idiotic, Talmudic, stupid, racist, bigoted state called Israel and the Jewish people, of course, that inhabit it. Think about that. This is all happening on our watch, and Trump's the bad guy because he pulled out the troops. And why are Jews complaining all of a sudden? Because, I don't know, why are they complaining? Now you have this truce, you know, there's supposed to be a truce. And so then the Americans are going to pull back. 1,000 U.S. troops are pulling out, and they're bringing them out by trucks and vans and whatever they can get their hands on, aircraft. They're going now to where? Iraq. But guess what? The Iraqis never said come. That's how stupid the American military is. Oh, we're going to retreat to Iraq. The Iraqis say, hey, it's our country. What the hell are you doing in my country? Get your people out of my country. Who invited them to come here? Oh, they're coming to help fight ISIS. We didn't invite you. That's how stupid the American military really is. Think about it. It's like the same way with Jews and immigration. Oh, hi, you're in Lewiston, Maine? Oh, guess what? We just brought another boatload of Somalian migrants to you. They're going to be housed in your hotels now, and we're going to start putting them in your neighborhoods and houses, and we're going to give them money so they don't have to work, so they can just sit on the street corners and harass you all day. Well, that's kind of what Jews are doing with the American military. Hi, Iraq. We're going to move 1,000 of our people and put them in your country now, and they're going to sit around, and they're just going to be able to harass. Oh, we're going to use them to launch attacks on ISIS. Oh, you sound so brave. Actually, it sounds idiotic. honestly, from a geopolitical, this sounds absolutely idiotic. It's dumb. We are dealing with intellectual material that borderlines on psychotic stupidity. And people don't want to call it for what it is. When you look at the newspapers, Trump stabbed the Kurds in the back. Trump gave Russia, a gift, and Trump gave Syria oil, 2.5 billion barrels of oil. No, none of this. It's just, you guys are so stupid. It's like the inverse of reality. And I don't read too much because it's just so stupid. I get through 3-4 paragraphs of these national, not national, these geopolitical think tanks out there trying to impress us with how important they are and how Trump can beat China in the South China Seas and how Trump can beat Russia in Syria. Like, you guys are sitting there making hundreds of thousands of dollars to be complete buffoons and idiots. And we, the American people, are paying for it. So anyways, you've got this withdrawal going on. The U.S. withdrawal is supposed to go, again, from northeastern Syria, but they're going to put them in Iraq. And again, Iraqis, get out of here. Today, the Iraqis called on the United Nations to do their job and tell the Americans to get the heck out. Just today. Now, another fun thing I like. Esper, he's the... we call him ministers here. He's the defense secretary of defense in America. He's saying here he had spoke with his Iraqi counterpart and will continue. This is just this past Saturday, by the way. He said we'll continue to have conversations in the future, and the move will likely be viewed with skepticism by some in Iraq. Well, no. Esper is our secretary of defense. This guy is the secretary of defense, and he doesn't know how to evacuate troops from one country and just get them out. Trump said,
"Hey everyone,
I'm bringing the people
it's Barbara
home."
Jean Lindsay,
the Secretary of Defense basically shifts them to another country that doesn't even want them there.
Plans, need answers from the cosmos.
I'm looking at
again.
I look at these events and I just say, "How
stupid!
Check out
my show,
really have
the Cosmic Oracle here on
Revolution
Radio."
Oh, we're in a break
on.
Sorry about it. It's the Fetch. Back with more right after this. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch. Final half hour of the show here inside the LA primetime. Hope you're having a good afternoon. Obviously, good evening in the case of us over here in the Asian side of the world. Morning. It's morning. Okay, it's 2:32 in the morning. I try to keep my energy up, everybody. It's kind of hard. You know, you're working 24/7 sometimes. But hopefully we've managed to get the show at least semi-entertaining today. That would be a good start anyways, right? You know, years ago, I'm going to just kind of move off script a little bit, not that I've had much of a script today. But years ago, years and years and years ago, you've heard something about something called the Illuminatus Observer. And the Illuminatus Observer was predicated on this idea that there is a valid English Kabbalah. And a Kabbalah at the naming level is really just trying to pick out the essence, the esoteric essences of words. And just what is embedded and encoded into the words, whether it is actually crafted encoded or a, let's call it a spiritual encoding. And, you know, part of the idea of gematria and Kabbalah is that, you know, words that have the same value numerically share the same essence. Now, I'm not necessarily all into that idea. It's just part of the craft. And I had developed this thing called the Illuminatus Observer. And what I did is I said, look, English is based on something known as pi. It's actually based on the mathematical constant of pi. It had to deal with something known as the Masonic word. You know, there's always this word, and it's a big deal inside of Western civilization, this search for the lost word. In fact, there's a whole science, so to speak, within the Freemason system about this search for the lost word. I think the Moody Blues came out with something that kind of mimicked that, and they had something called the Lost Search for the Lost Chord, which was quite a psychedelic album in its day, something that I used to like to burn the incense. And yeah, back then you might have caught me with some green substances that I would be partaking of equally, and I would sit back and I would listen to In Search of the Lost Chord. But that was kind of like also In Search of the Lost Word. And I had this idea that said, you know, all things are from the word, da 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 da. And so I started to break down English, and I realized that English was really this hyper-dimensional representation of the number pi. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be interesting then if the word itself, meaning this magical, mythical word of God, word of GD, God, not GD, but this word of God was actually a number itself, because the whole system, this Illuminati system, this, some call it satanic. I actually don't, because there's a lot of wisdom in this if you understand how it works. But they looked at it and I'm like, okay, fine. It's based on letters, numbers, and sounds. I'm like, wouldn't it be interesting then that if the word itself was pi, and therefore the alphabet was the actual word itself, and from this alphabet we can create all things. And there's quite a lot of genius in this 26-letter alphabet. So I had begun writing about this back, really I started to give presentations in bars and things like that in 1996, 97, you know, up until about 2002, 3, 4, 5 even. I was actually up until 2007, 8, I was giving presentations on this. Traveled the world, quite frankly, a little bit, giving presentations about this stuff, usually to Freemasonic systems. Or people, actually, people that were fairly high-level Freemasons. So I would give this presentation. And when I began to put it down into writing, because I kept getting banned everywhere I would go, I would be sitting there, and as I wrote, it was fairly inspired, and a lot of people started to like what I did. And I had, believe it or not, some of my biggest adherents were people in the Jewish community. They found huge value in what I was doing because they had their own Kabbalah, and nobody had put a Kabbalah to English other than Crowley in a way that I had actually done this. So they thought, wow, this is actually, it's amazing, it's great stuff, all this kind of stuff, but they were Jewish. And we got into many arguments. And again, I'm not necessarily psychotically anti-Jewish as Jews are anti-Goy, okay? I'm not like a Jew at the end of the day. So we can still talk to people. And we got talking about how, you know, the differences between Jews and non-Jews and a Jewish Kabbalah and an English Kabbalah, and how the English is actually designed and built around life. It's not built around trying to kill people all the time. And she said, well, you know, you can't be saying that because you always come off as sounding anti-Semitic. And I told this Jewish woman at the time, and I forget her name, unfortunately, I said, you know what? I don't care. Because at some point you have to speak the truth. You have to speak to power. You have to speak clear. You cannot constantly cower and mask your words in the hope that you'll be treated differently. Because you won't be. The second these psychotic monsters get wind of just what you're up to, they don't hesitate to destroy them. Literally, they don't. They don't hesitate for 1 second. But they will be very quick, even if they like you, they will be very quick to try to put you into this role of being, quote unquote, the anti-Semite. It never fails. And I called her on this. I said, why do you Jews always do this? We're having great conversations, and now you want to taint the conversation with a poisoned word that you Jews created that's not even accurate. Look, I find the Jewish Kabbalistic system to be absolutely appalling, and it's so false and so wrong that it creates nothing but psychotic monsters, perverted psychopaths of the most evil people that now grace planet Earth. And it's all coming. No, no, no. And finally, after months of this, I used to do this day in and day out. And she finally, this is the problem from a cultural perspective. Jews want to sit there and use the term anti-Semite on us all the time. They want to accuse us of being an anti-Semite. And all this word is superiority, some type of superiority. Okay, I don't know if there's audio or not. Looks like we're connected. I'm not sure. Yeah, I think we're connected, guys. So anyways, we're talking to this Jewish. I said, here's the main problem with Jewish culture. You don't critically self-examine yourself. You will never forgo that which is evil within your society. You don't do it. You allow evil to persist within your society. You have embraced evil as a social development type of strategy here. Literally, you embrace, as Jews, they embrace evil. They embrace perversion. They embrace everything that you can imagine that is harmful to the human existence. And you never forgo. I said, you want us to forgo Christianity. Where is it in the Jewish community where you are asking your people to forgo Talmud? Where are you asking in your community for the Jewish people to forgo Torah? You can read it. Any common sense sane person knows very well that Talmud and the Torah are absolutely repulsive and should be rejected by every single self-respecting human being on the planet. But they don't do it. They continue to push it as if somehow this is the epitome of human existence. Rabbi Schneur Zalman says, all non-Jews, and this is their religious teachings, all non-Jews are evil by nature. The Jews are the crown of creation. The non-Jews are the scum of the earth. And I told her, I said, I can go through quote after quote after quote after quote after quote of Jewish repulsive mentality, and Jews don't reject it. In fact, they want to call me an anti-Semite for just raising the fact that you are littered with repulsive people as your religious scions. What do you want us in the human family, the elite of Western intellectual thinking, which is what we have within our Western Kabbalah, what do you want us to think of you sleaze in the Jewish community when you're sitting there, 1 million Arabs are not worth a Jewish fingernail? Like, what type of idiot says stuff like that? I'll tell you what type of idiot says that. A rabbi. In this case, Rabbi Yaakov Peron. Rabbi Yitzhak Ginsburg, who is basically the person whom, you think I forgot it. What is that guy's name? I forget his name. It's late. What's the guy's name? Anyways, it's the guy behind the Noahide laws, put it that way. He said, the blood of the Jewish people is loved by the Lord. It is therefore redder and their life is preferable. This type of racist mentality oozes throughout all of Jewish culture and society. Everything about us Jews is different. Jews are ontologically, biologically exceptional. No, they're the most perverse, idiotic culture you can get out there. But these people with their chutzpah, they just don't shut up. That phrase came from Elie Wiesel, a fraud, a piece of crap scumbag, quite frankly, on the historical scene. And these are people they follow. According to the Talmud, one may kill any Gentile. Oh, it's not a problem because and then Jews don't sit there and reject this type of teaching. They accept it into their hearts. It's so bad, guys, in the Jewish community that you will have rabbis, because y'all hear about the Catholics and all the priests. And yeah, that's a huge problem. Huge problem with priests predating on children. But then you've got a number of Jews who tolerate sexual abuse of their own children by their rabbis. Their rabbis are some of the most sick, psychotic perverts out there, and they won't say a thing about this perversion, about this predation on their own children, because within Jewish culture, it's actually punishable by death to report another Jew to the goyim and have that Jew tried within a goyim court. You can be ostracized and you can even be killed in their culture. And I told this woman, everybody knows what's going on that's Jewish, man. I'm not Jewish, but I know what's going on in your culture. And I know you don't want to be a part of it, but I said, where are the Jews out there reneging this culture? Where are they saying, I no longer identify as Jewish? How many of them are out there? They will hide. They'll change their looks. They'll change their name. They'll dye their hair. They'll get nose jobs. But they won't reject the culture. I told her, why is that? Because there is something innately evil in your culture that we as goys, excuse the word, I told her, just don't quite understand, because we inherently are not evil like you Jews are. And of course, if you can imagine talking to a Jew like this, and all the time she's just trying to blurt out, you're an anti-Semite. I said, don't even go there. I'm having a conversation with you. I'm not having a conversation with the parrot programming within you. I don't care about your parrot programming, because I'm telling you precisely the problem of Jewish culture. It embraces evil. It embraces debauchery. It embraces fraud. It embraces dishonesty. It embraces sadism. It embraces perversion. It is part of their development strategy, their evolution strategy. That's why Jews cannot forgo this type of emotion, this type of mentality. It is part of their genetic makeup now. They have been so prone to do this that they don't know how to escape, because their genetic is now tied to it. They have basically thought themselves into the pure evil that many of our religions speak about. And a lot of people will say, oh, Jew, Fitch, that's anti-Semitic. Okay, it's not up to me. It's not up to me to judge these people. It's up to me to create a better world for me and my children, my family, my people, my Volk, my society. And I can't do it if I allow evil always to be everywhere I go. Like, what are you Jews doing here? It's like putting Somalians in the middle of Lewiston. What are you doing here at the end of the day? Really, what are you here for? Because you don't offer any value to us. You don't offer anything uplifting to us. You're basically just here to predate. You don't bring us value. And that's why Jews will constantly want to tell us, oh, we Jews have contributed disproportionately to Western civilization. They haven't done crap. At the end of the day, I don't consider killing off 100 million of our Volk, of our people, to be something that Jews have been beneficial to our culture. Oh, look what we did. Yeah, you've been killing off our people for hundreds of years now. And you want to tell us you're disproportionately helped us? Give us, again, the chutzpah, the stupidity of their culture knows no bounds. There's a rabbi out there. He's very enlightened. Rabbi Yosef Feldman. He's from a place, I'm not sure that's the right thing, but his words here, and this is a rabbi, touching the genitals of young children should not be illegal for the Jewish people. And you know, it's like, these are your rabbis. These are the teachers of your moral civilization, your moral culture. And these garbage human beings are now the teachers of your politicians, of your presidents, of your presidential advisors, of your global leaders. We have within our human family, our human tree, whatever you want to call it, a priesthood of evil that now advises all of our leaders across the planet. And these leaders, no matter how much they want to try to be good, like Jews themselves, they just cannot forgo the evil. It's almost as if the story of the serpent who says, I will give you the world. All you have to do is serve me. You know, and Jesus is tempted 40 times and he says, I will not, you know, whatever. I forget the story. I'm past those days. But I remember a story, something like that. And that's kind of what we're in today. all of these politicians are saying, I will serve this great serpent, this great evil, just so I can have power and dominion over all my human family here. And they go about and they work hard and they get the support of the Jewish people. And guess what? They serve evil. Can you imagine a Trudeau? How did a Trudeau up in Canada get reelected? How did he do that? How do so many of these politicians who have proven time and time again to be nothing but Jewish agents within our midst, how is it, seriously, that they are able to return to power again and again and again? It's time, really, for 88% of Americans to view this evil construction as the greatest threat to our republic. It's The Fetch. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you Saturday inside the iLife. Intelligent media for the politically aware, 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. Good night from Riyadh. Good night, everybody.